ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
And Warwick Hadfield joins us once again for a look at what's gone on this week in the sporting week. Warwick, good evening to you. Welcome back.
It's good to be here.
Now, the Perth Bears, it's been announced, Roger Cook, the Western Australian Premier, jumped the gun on this a bit, put out his own announcement, saying the Perth Bears would join the NRL in 2027. So there'll be a new league team. So it'll be one from Perth and the one from PNG, I presume, is still on track. So, yeah, Warwick, how's it going down in Perth? I mean, Perth's Aussie rules territory, isn't it?
How's it going down? Well, it's not going down well in that media monolith that there's the Seven News organisation, which also is part of the West Australian newspaper. Now, their front page was the Bad News Bears, which was...
Okay.
Their editor is a guy by the name of Chris Dorr. Now, Chris probably has a bit of a score to settle with News Limited. He left News Limited when he was editor of The Australian. In fact, very successful editor of The Australian he was too. But he left in strange circumstances. He claimed he was burnt out. There are other claims of other issues involving a party in America. But he's certainly leading the charge against the Bears, which in rugby league, of course, gets a lot of money out of News Limited these days. He claims it's his reason for opposing it is that Roger Cook et al., the taxpayers of Western Australia, are chipping in $65 million, and he doesn't like he doesn't mind. He says having them in Perth, but he doesn't believe the taxpayer should put in. But when you see how much money the taxpayer puts into, well, the West Australian Football Commission, these days known as WA Football, building stadiums like Optus, that Optus Stadium, as it's called, the sponsor's name, or the Perth Stadium, whatever we wish to call it, I don't think that probably holds as much water as it could. But the interesting, you know, having got beyond that, and obviously it's going to happen, and in 2027 they'll come in and they'll need a coach, and Brent Reed from News Limited, they're everywhere when it comes to rugby league. He broke the story that Mal Meninga, an immortal, the number 13 rugby league immortal, Australian coach at the moment, the man who made the Maroons almost impregnable in State of Origin, has said he's interested in coaching the Bears. Now, we have to always be a little bit wary because Mal was also interested in politics at one stage.
He was. He famously spat the dummy in the Canberra radio studio.
I sat in the very chair. I said to Genevieve, who was the presenter, I said, which chair is it? I want to sit in the same chair as Mal. So, but look, it was... when you look back at new franchises, clubs or organisations when they come into competitions, there's a sort of a history that says it's smart to have a high-profile coach. Now, Melbourne Storm, of course, had Chris Anderson, who was a great coach with Canterbury Bankstown. In more recently, of course, Redcliffe, the Dolphins, had Wayne Bennett. And I think the other side of that is the Gold Coast Suns. They had Guy McKenna, who had never coached at AFL level. And I think it's taken until now with the appointment of Damien Hardwick for the Suns to catch up. And I think the AFL learned its lesson from that because they had Kevin Sheedy at GWS.
That's right, you know, I did too.
And of course, we all remember that your favourite Swans were going downhill at a great rate until the AFL lured Ron Barassi.
Out of retirement
and brought him to Sydney. Now, you know, Ron was probably a little bit out of touch with the modern game, but the fact that he was Ronald Dale Barassi.
He lent it his name. And that was a lot, actually.
He also put at risk, I guess you'd call it, a great win-loss ratio that he'd had as a coach elsewhere in the VFL. And that was a thing to do that. I mean, you know, Ron was very proud of his record. And as you know, if you've ever got his autograph, he's got all his achievements handwritten alongside with his name. Mm-hmm. So look, what it says, of course, is it would be a smart move. Now, Brad Arthur, the former Parramatta coach, had been a bit of a favourite hitherto, but I would think the NRL and the Australian Rugby League Commission would love to have Mal heading up this new operation. There's lots of money, of course, involved in it, because very soon there's going to be all sorts of renegotiations about the rugby league television rights. And yeah, it may.
Is it going to work? Do you think? It's. The Bears, of course, is, you know, the famous defunct North Sydney side. There's some suggestion that they might play a game or two at North Sydney Oval. Is that going
to happen? Well, they will, but the latest story out of there is that North Sydney Oval needs an upgrade to be able to accommodate a crowd, and more taxpayers' money needed for that. It's a long time since the AFL, and we'll get to this elsewhere, the AFL or the NRL have put their own hands in their pockets to build a stadium. It seems various governments. It's interesting that I think Peter Volandis discovered that whatever skeletons he may know about in various political closets on the eastern side of Australia aren't quite, he doesn't have quite as many on the western side. I think Roger Cook sort of outmanoeuvred him a little bit, and the $65 million will all be spent on the western side of Eucla. So there's going to be, you know, from that point of view, I think the Western Australians haven't done too badly. It's certainly a lot cheaper than what it's costing the Australian taxpayer for the team in PNG, that's for sure.
That is for sure, yeah. Oh, well, good luck to them anyway. And the back on the AFL, as you mentioned, the protests continue against the stadium in Hobart for the Tasmanian Devils. Now, they're due in the competition in 2028. What is the latest here, Warwick? I mean, it's a project which, I mean, look, everything's controversial in Tassie. I mean,
there are particular trenches that everyone, development against non-development.
North v South,
everything. The latest is, of course, the government's going to enable this special legislation to push it through.
They basically said, look, you know, okay, we're just going to do it and override planning and all that sort of stuff and just go ahead.
The interesting development is that the federal group, which owns the casinos and plenty of other tourism operations in Tasmania, including, from memory, that wonderful train ride on out of Queenstown, they've come out and said they're against the stadium. They think it's going to ruin the aesthetics of Hobart.
Yeah, what's that about?
Well, I don't know what that's about particularly. I mean, you know, they're talking about they don't like the fact that due process is being ripped up with this enabling legislation, and they think the rules that apply to them should also apply to the state government. But there will be plenty in Hobart and Tasmania to tell you that the rules have not always applied to the federal group in relation to gambling restrictions and people being able to nominate how much they wish to lose and those sorts of things. So, once again, it's a fascinating thing. Now, I checked this out because we talked about it last week. Half the stadium needs to be finished by 2027, and it needs to be available to have games played on it in 2029 for the AFL to agree to this Tasmanian side coming in. Now, it's you know, it's going to be an awful lot of big boats arriving in up the Derwent with lots of steel and concrete. Given that they haven't really started even now and they're still arguing the toss, so I don't really know. But I did find fascinating Brendan Gale, who's the CEO of the Tassie side. He put something out on LinkedIn, which shows a classic case of hedging your bets either way. He congratulated both the Prime Minister and the former Leader of the Opposition for showing their grace on election night, and he said that having different opinions doesn't mean you have to be in conflict with each other. And I just said, yep, that's pretty good diplomacy, Brendan, for a former Richmond ruckman.
it is an issue. I mean, Tassie's small, you know, can they sustain it? And it's a massive, this project will cost them more than $1 billion, well in excess of $1 billion, you'd think. Given
Geelong's small, but have a look at the stadium just up the road from where I'm sitting. And it's probably, if you added it all up by now, you'd be getting close to $1 billion. One stage, Geelong's five electorates had a great deal to say in both federal and state elections, and ministers and shadow ministers would arrive down here at election time. If one said $12 million, the other one said $13 million the next day. And there's an awful lot. You can understand that, you know, Rockliffe, if he's still the Premier, wants to be the Premier who brings the AFL to Tasmania. It's been a long-running sore, as you well know, going back, when I was sports editor of the Mercury, I had Royce Hart as a columnist, and we came up with this idea of give us the Lions and we'll make them roar again. Well, of course, the Lions went to Brisbane where they're still roaring. But, I mean, that was in 1989, and I know even before that there was lots of people who always felt that Tasmania, which was born and bred as an Australian rules football state.
Yeah, absolutely.
In fact, some people claim the game actually originated in Perth, and that's Perth in Tasmania, in the Midlands, not Perth in Western Australia. I think that theory has been greatly debunked.
Your point, yeah, I think it has been debunked, but it's a good theory. it's a bit like the theory that the game derives from Marne Groek, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is also a good theory. Geelong, as you say, I just glanced at it, as a population, Greater Geelong's a population of nearly 300,000. Mm. So it's less than the population of Tassie.
That's true. And look, I mean, Geelong, though, of course, has had, and it's a very famous sponsorship, and a global company is the major sponsor that was celebrated the 100th anniversary thereof this year. And, I mean, it's going way back when, this is another story worth recording, those dreadful people in Melbourne who forged the maps of Victoria to show Melbourne as closer to the goldfields than Geelong. So all the unaware people in Britain gave all their money, invested all their money in Melbourne as part of the being involved in the gold rush. So, you know, I mean, it was quite the town when the football club started way back when.
Yeah, of course. Look, I know, it just gets back to this thing. There is an opportunity here for Tassie to do it, and if they don't take it now, that'll be it, I would think.
Well, a lot of the people opposed to the stadium are very happy to have and really would like an AFL team. They just think this is a ridiculous ask by the AFL to have to build this brand new stadium. I mean, you know, people claim that Bellerive Oval is not up to it. Who would know? I mean, there was a game there last weekend.
Well, particularly because they say yes, and you know, because not all the games will be played in this new stadium anyway, because they're going to have to play some games in the north.
Well, you can't do anything in Tassie in the south, unless
you
replicate it in the
York
north.
Park.
And Jackie Lambie, she'd have them playing at West Park in Burnie if she had her way. More taxpayers' money.
Oh, dear. Round ball game. Matilda's playing in Bunbury.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, here we go again. The Matildas through support of the West Australian government are going to be playing some matches against Slovenia and Panama in the West, and one of those will be in Bunbury, a lovely little town. And yeah, it'll be great to take the Matildas to the region. And also in the association football, we've got the grand final of the women.
Melbourne victory in the Central Coast Mariners. Yeah.
Central Coast Mariners are a bit of a surprise, given that they beat Melbourne City. Melbourne City, of course, always been a bit of a standard bearer in the women's game, so that's a big one. And there's also the men's semi-finals, the Central Coast Mariners. You've got a couple of really good teams, some really good teams going there. But mostly, you have to think, look, you've got three Melbourne sides in the men's semi-finals. You've got one Melbourne side, and could have been easily two, in the women's grand final. And you have to think, Melbourne being the epicentre of association football at the moment. And I sort of just put my mind to it, and I thought, Raleigh Rusick, this man who emigrated from Europe, in the 1960s, early 70s, he arrived in Australia. He wanted to get out of war-torn part of Europe. And he'd read all these things about this wonderful, warm country, and he turned up at Melbourne Airport in the middle of winter got the shock of his life. But from there, he created this... He actually revolutionised association football in this country, because it took Australia to its first World Cup. Got sacked by Sir Arthur George for reasons which still remain in contention, but he did have a huge role to play in reshaping football in Australia, but in Victoria generally. And I guess if we look back, this domination at the moment is one part of his legacy.
Yep. What's happening in cricket, by the way, is the IPL back on? This is amid the missiles being fired back and forth.
Well, there is a ceasefire, which. You know, some would say is holding, some would say isn't. But it's supposed to start on Saturday. Whether some of the Australian players go back is still a matter for some contention, I gather. I think we'll just have to wait and see on that. But
once the money is dangled, I think.
Once the contract is dangled, this contract says, and if you don't fulfil this contract, you won't get another one.
You won't get another one. Yeah.
The rubies and rupees of the IPL are very, very powerful indeed. And also out of India, we have this other great story, the retirement from Test cricket of Virat Kohli.
Of Virat Kohli, yeah.
I think one of the questions, there'll be many questions about this, but one of the things that does arise is what impact will it have on the future of Test cricket? Now, the the BCCI, the people running cricket in India, they just love T20 cricket for all the as I said, rubies and rupees that it brings in. But Virat Kohli has stood up on behalf of Test cricket for a long, long time. And he had the power to do it because, you know, as it is in India, great cricketers are almost deities. And with him gone now, you do wonder if there's any other voice which is powerful enough to say we all still want to play Test cricket. So from that point of view, you know, it's a bit of concern. And we should just make sure we note that he was among the modern greats, up there with Steve Smith, Joe Root, Kane Williamson. He upset Australians a lot. He embodied, really, the modern India. He really bristled at, you know, those old, terrible old toilet humour stories that people, that cricketers always put in their biographies about touring India. And when, you know, the last time I went to India, you know, the telecommunications were superior to what we had in Australia, and there is a wonderful expanding middle class, and there are lots of great things happening there. And he embodied that with that famous chin of his, which he stuck out all the time, and even caused a whole new fashion plate with the way his beard it was shaved on that chin. Yeah, so
that's true.
Extraordinary player.
Speaking of cricket, Bob Cowper died.
Yeah, 84 was Bob, and Bob was many things. He was a very good batsman. His top score of 307. Took a lot of wickets with his off spin, but he was in many ways, and he was a very fine rugby union player as well. His father, Dave, actually captained the Wallabies, the first Victorian to so do. But he was also what should have been, in my mind, the canary in the coal mine for Australian cricket officials. He only played Test cricket for 4 years. He retired at 27 because he just said, well, there's no money in it. And he went off and set up businessmen, and when he died, he was worth $100 million and so on. But this was the sign that the cricketers were starting to think, well, all this money is coming into the game and I'm not getting part of it. And in fact, he became an advisor when Dean Chappell was captain. He became an advisor on, you know, the cricketers trying to get a better financial deal out of Don Bradman and so on, and eventually ended up on the advisory board for World Series cricket. And perhaps things would have been so much different.
Yeah.
There would have been no Kerry Packer if, you know, Bradman and Alan Barnes and those blokes had said, well, if we've lost a great cricketer like Bob Cowper because we couldn't pay him enough money, maybe we
should be doing something about it.
Yeah. A bit differently.
Yeah, well, I think that's right, actually. There wouldn't have been any Kerry Packer. Just finally, the Demons doing pretty well in tennis at the Italian Open, getting ready for Roland Garros.
Have you seen the facility which they play in Rome? It's got all these wonderful statues around it. it's the Foro Italico, the Italian Forum. And because I think, you know, as we know, you know, the Roland Garros has played on the Terba too, the clay, and everyone starts playing on clay to readapt at this time of year. Interesting. Novak Djokovic, lots of reports of a decline ahead of Paris. He's not going to Rome. He's going to play in Geneva instead. But there's just just this idea that all of a sudden Anno Domini has caught up with him. So it'll be interesting to see if he does. He's won Paris three times, but because it's really been hard work because it's not his natural environment. Mm. But and we should just note a lovely story. Destiny Aiova has got a wild card. Now, she was seen a long time ago, half a lifetime ago, in fact, as one of the next big things in Australian tennis. At the age of 12, she won a tournament at Roland Garros. But at 25, you'd have to say she hasn't lived up to that promise. No. But people in Tennis Australia still think she can do that. So they've have been... In part, they were part of this decision to, as they say in tennis, grant her a wild card. So it'll be interesting to see how she goes. She did pretty well at the Australian Open, got to the second round there and been doing okay. But just at 25 in tennis, if you haven't made it.
If you haven't won something by the end, no. Yep, true enough. Anyway, good luck to her. All right, Warwick, good luck to you too as well.
Yes, thanks, Philip.
I'll be off for
Exactly whereabouts are you going?
I'm heading over to Europe. I'm going to check up on my family and...
well, you'd get along to Roland Garros, surely.
Get along
or, to... or go to Lord's for the Test Cricket Championship final. You've got to do something.
I'll try. All right, Warwick. So, talk in a month or two.
Good on you. Okay. Well done. See you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast
For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.